Dearly beloved brethren and sisters in Christ Jesus, we'd like to pick up the thread by going back to the time of Noah and the devastating flood. Genesis chapter 9 begins with, God blessed Noah and his sons and said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. In Genesis 10 begins the record of the line of men through after the flood. Noah begat Ham, and Ham begat Cush, and Cush begat Nimrod. And Nimrod began to be mighty in the earth. He was a mighty hunter of men before Yahweh. Wherefore it is said, as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before Yahweh. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babylon, and Erech, and Akkad, and Calna in the land of Shinar. From that land he went forth to Assyria, and built Nineveh, and the city Rehoboth, and Calak, the same being a great city. Thus far, Genesis 10. This is the information given to us in the Bible concerning the origin of the kingdom of men. It consisted of 8 cities and a territory watered by the Euphrates and Ahitical or Tigris, rivers of Cush, styled the land of Shinar or Shinar, or the spoil of the tooth, as is conjectured by some as the meaning of Shinar. The territory was so named because it was the hunting ground where Nimrod rent the prey, human prey, on founding his dominion. The name Nimrod itself seems to indicate rebellion. Nimrod, therefore, as a mighty hunter of men, presents a picture of a spoiler and a trafficker of men's lives, or even a merchant for the disposition of souls or lives according to his own urges. He was a man of the same mind expressed later by King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, who said to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? Daniel 3, verse 15. From the beginning, the kingdom of men, therefore, has been led by men who consider themselves elevated above all other powers, including God. Who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? In fact, the prophet Daniel later alludes to this mindset found in a king enumerated in chapter 11, verse 36 of Daniel. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished. For that is determined shall be done. Now, the Bible history of nations shows that war comes upon them as a punishment for their iniquity and rebellion. Remember the Apostle James, he said, from whence cometh wars and so forth among you? Because you covet, you lust for things that you don't have. So war is the outcome of that, and war at the same time becomes the punishment of such motivations. Now the earth in the days of Nimrod, though in its infancy, had become vain in its imaginations, and its heart was darkened. Go to, said they at the time, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly, and let us build us a city and a tower and a top in the heavens. And let us make us a name, lest we be dashed in pieces over the face of all the earth. Let's make a name for ourselves, lest we be dashed in pieces over the face of all the earth, like a piece of pottery shattered. Now this was a policy designed by men to circumvent any purpose God had and any power, so-called, in their minds, God had in his exercise of lordship over them. Mankind were then united in one community and notably had nothing to fear from any foreign power. They were the only power. There were no divided up countries or nations back then. There was no maintaining of a balance of power between east and west, north and south. No need for statesmanship. They were just one community in the time of the Tower of Babel. There was only one political body of people on the earth, no foreign enemy. So the policy of the leaders at that time was to consolidate their power against whom? The same God that brought the flood upon the face of the earth. They wanted to consolidate their strength in case deity decided to make a move against them again. What a thought. Let's consider the Tower of Babel that they started to build. What was its known attribute? Height. The flood waters rising, the height would give above such a threat, would it not? So this was the plotting of the men of the time of the Tower of Babel. A challenge to the God of heaven. You can't reach us. We're too high now for the floods. Now, human society at this time after Noah was scarcely older than 100 years old. And to get a sense of perspective of that, those driving around London here may see a store called The Bay. And this is the current front of the Hudson's Bay Company. And that company alone is over 350 years old. But even in this very early stage, 100 years or so of human interaction after Noah, we see that presence of a desire to push God away. They didn't like the idea of God being so close to them, watching them all the time. So as they built a tower, they pushed God away. This is the domain of man, ever higher. And God's domain, therefore, diminished. That was the thought. Now, concerning this, Dr. Thomas wrote, "We need not be surprised that the earth should have been corrupt and impatient of God's government so soon after such a devastating overthrow of the old world. When we look into the state of things in our new world of the Western Hemisphere and compare the state of society now with what it was 80 years ago, and this is back in his day, we have a pretty fair illustration of the rapid progress with which the old man of the earth advances in impiety and in crime. And he is the same in all periods of his history," he wrote. "He does not now build cities and towers of defense against heaven, as he did a century after the flood. Not because because he is at peace with heaven, but because he has got it into his crazy head that heaven has forgotten all about him and has concluded to abandon the earth to mankind. He does not fortify against being broken to pieces from heaven or from thence, but against the filibustering propensities of his fellow man. It is for this reason that he fortifies. He knows no God but his own power. And that power he will defend, if need be, against heaven." So as the typical multitudinous man of the earth being a symbolic term to represent all of the carnal mind of the earth, the multitudinous man of the earth was diligently engaged in the work of the Tower of Babel. And Yahweh condescended to view their proceedings. He overheard their speculations, their proud schemes, based upon the principle of union is strength. "Behold," said he to his Elohim, "the people is one, and they have all one lip, and this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do." But what's interesting about our age of technology? They're now talking about interpretation devices, immediately able to overcome any barriers from language. And nothing will restrain the people from anything that they have imagined to do. What does God do to stop that? He raises up nation against nation. And that's wherefore we are anticipating war to come before too long. This vain imagination of man's heart is the characteristic of our time just as much as it was in the Tower of Babel. All things are supposed to be possible to our great engineers, our men of science, the mechanics, designing, scheming, thinking of new things to achieve. They imagine they can do anything, and they judge that money can be made by doing so. And when that money comes introduced, there's nothing that can restrain them from attempting it, even if carrying it into effect might overturn the purpose of God. Their principle, when they acknowledge God at all, is let God look after his own affairs. He's up there, and we'll attend to ours. And that mindset is an important mindset to take note of. It deals with the power upon the earth today that will be particularly reprehensible to the God of heaven. In the meantime, mankind undertakes to do what they please with the earth itself, as though it belonged to them. It has been created as an arena for them to merely display their ingenuity and to oppress each other. Now Noah, back to him, had known the old pre-flood world for 600 years. Shem, his son, had known it for 98 years before the flood occurred. So they saw now what was happening, and what did they do? Did they get carried along? They still maintained the faith by which they obtained a good report and became heirs of the righteousness which is by faith. So they separated themselves. They did not want to be part of this Babylonish or Babel idea. And in so doing, they condemned their contemporaries as they had done the world before the flood. Same faithfulness, the same condemnation upon the wicked. Shem, who had commenced his new career at Ararat in journeying from the east, did not follow the trail of the sons of Ham over to Shinar's plain, but descended toward the Mediterranean instead. And as Dr. Thomas wrote, ruled his people in Palestine as Melchizedek, king of righteousness, a righteous king, and as king of peace, and a priest of the Most High God, possessor of the heavens and the earth. There was a split, a difference, even before the Tower of Babel, when the godly-minded separated themselves and had over them a king of righteousness. Now this man Shem lived for 152 years after the death of Noah. And in fact, he was 50 years contemporary with the descendant Jacob, one of the chief fathers, of course, of the Hebrew nation. So that while the unprincipled sons of Ham were defying the Most High power of the heavens and seeking to exalt their own name on his earth, there was the righteous king of Palestine upholding the truth in the Garden of Yahweh and became the head of the sons of God in contradistinction to the children of men. And in so doing, he anticipated the kingdom of Yahweh and turned his back to the kingdom of men. But we'll note in the history that the things which the Cushite descendants of Ham so much dreaded was the very thing that was brought upon them as a punishment for their impiety. Let us go down, said Yahweh to his Elohim, and there confound their language that they may not understand one another's speech. So this was the original divide and conquer strategy. Yahweh divided the people, the united people, by confounding their speech. And then he sent in a conqueror among them to break them in pieces as a potter's vessel and to scatter the fragments over all the earth. And this conqueror was Eth-Nimrod, sent forth from the faces of Yahweh to hunt the apostates from them. And the war thus brought upon them by their presumption and their pride completely shattered them, and brought the building of their glorious city and tower to a standstill. They left off to build the city, and therefore the name of it called Babel, or confusion, Babel, because Yahweh did there confound the language of all the earth. And from thence did God, by the hand of Nimrod, scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth, Genesis 9, verses 8 and 9. So the city of confusion, Babylon, was the point of Nimrod's departure on his career of conquest, listed in Genesis 10, verses 10 to 11. From thence to Jehovah scatter the people abroad, Dr. Thomas renders it. Nimrod evidently hunted the people as beasts until the land of their wickedness acquired the name the land of the enemies too, from Shin, Tooth, and Ar, an enemy, the derivation of Shinar that Dr. Thomas perverted. Now that sharp tooth, ready to rend and tear, has been a continuing illustration of the general character of mankind dealing with one another. We might also style it the serpent's tooth. And this tooth has been employed many times in man's history, even against Jerusalem.